This is the CU 2.0 podcast with your host, Robert McGarvey. Big new ideas about credit unions. Big new ideas about credit unions. CU 2.0 podcast.
Here's the fast track to making members feel they're being sold to. Offer them products and services they have absolutely no interest in or use for. How often does your credit union do exactly that? Probably pretty often. Probably more often than you like to admit. But if you want a member to feel understood, valued, etc., offer him or her something they honestly want or need. Then they'll see you as a friend, a helper, not a pesty salesperson. You're bringing a solution. How cool is that? If only it were so simple, you grumble. I can hear those grumbles. You can also make it exactly that simple. Welcome to the CU 2.0 podcast. This is your host, Robert McGarvey. Meet Fed, the CEO of London-based Abaca, a company in the business of harnessing AI to help financial institutions, credit unions included, better serve their members. Fed also is a strong believer in democratizing his tools. He proudly says Abaca serves small financial institutions as well as giants. The company uses a SaaS model, software as a service, so users pay as they go and for what they consume. Some FIs spend low five figures in a year with Abaca. Others may be high six figures and beyond. There's a place for you there. So what you want to know is how to offer members what they want. Really, really do exactly that. Listen to the podcast where Fed talks about Abaca's tools for zeroing in on what he calls the next best action. That is pinpointing what this credit union needs to offer this member right now. How? By using account data the institution has on hand, supplement that with publicly available third-party data, social media posts, for instance, credit history, that sort of stuff, all very easily obtained. Crunch that data right with the proper AI tool, says Fed, and an institution can jump from its 3% conversion rate to 30%. 3% to 30%. I know you want to hear more about this. Along the way in this podcast, Fed talks about Abaca's conversational AI chatbox tools. And do you know many members, in fact, prefer to talk with a machine? And also about how AI is making PFM tools, at long last, easy to use and actually useful. AI again. The theme of this podcast is that AI has come of age. It's now ready for credit union deployment. Credit unions can compete with the big financial institutions if they have the right AI tools, compete on an even playing field. That is very cool. In the show notes, you'll find links to prior CU 2.0 podcasts dealing with AI. There's one with Posh Development, one with Coalesce, both DCU Innovation Lab companies. There's also a link to a podcast with the Innovation Lab director, Vasilis Roussos. It's all in the show notes. Listen up. What I want to talk to you about, obviously, is what tools you have for financial institutions, particularly credit unions.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what tools you have? What do you have that's new? What do you have where they go, wow, that's cool?
No. We've got two things. One is called Next Best Action. The second one is called Conversational AI. Both products use machine learning, artificial intelligence. So the first one, Next Best Action, is basically a system which enable our engine to analyze customer data and to predict what are the next best action that can be relevant for those customers. One of the challenges that the banks are facing are the lack of information, the inability to build insights on their customer at scale, and specifically, actually, the global pandemic has accelerated that challenge. It's really difficult to reach out to customers. It's really difficult to gather more information, more data on those customers. And it's even more difficult to understand how to create a hyper personalized experience for them. You know, some individuals would be interested in credit cards and loans, others would be interested in mortgages, others would be interested in saving to go for on a holiday. You know, they could be also interested in insurance product or retirement for that matter. And so one of the challenges of this organization is to identify what can be very relevant to that individual when depending on their context, depending on their personal situation, and to try to engage them on those specific immediate interests.
Now, I know that's a problem for particularly small financial institutions where they tend to mass mail the same offer to everybody.
That's right.
Which is very wasteful. And if you just bought a car, probably you're not interested in car financing. And,
right. Precisely. Yes.
How do your tools help them figure out that next best action?
So we are able to get more information, basically more data on those customers. So by sourcing a number of other type of information, that could be behavioral data, could be emotional data, text data, it could be credit scoring, it could be indeed if you bought a car recently. And we are able to cross-check that information. And then our models basically are able to identify you as an individual and to build your persona and to identify based on this persona and to predict basically accurately what message can resonate with you, what interest do you have in the short term, and scrolling the range of products that the bank has in their book, in their portfolio, we're able to basically engage with the next best action that could activate that individual.
And where do you get the data from?
And so we've got two things. One is, well, we've already trained our system on huge number of data. We've, you know, got millions of data points for a large number of individuals, customers across different segments, across different demographics, across different range of income, across, you know, even across different countries. And then for a given individual, we're also able to cross-check that information with third-party sources of data. So, you know, you have data that are available that you can capture from other sources. In finance, you have a solution called open banking. So through data aggregation and account data aggregation, you can infer more information on that individual. And then you can also help out, of course, in the that individual consent to it. You can share, for example, your Facebook profile or your Twitter account. And people actually are able to and willing to share more information if they can see that there is added value on the back of it.
Well, Twitter, those accounts with some exceptions are public information anyway, right?
Yeah, but even if they are public information, you should still have consent from the user account holder before being able to utilize that information. So if you have a Twitter account, for example, yes, I can look at it, but I can't really utilize the data or process the data in it. I should be asking your permission for before being able to do that, which we do.
I got you.
Yeah.
Now, historically, I think financial institutions have only looked at their own data.
And that's right.
Historically, I don't think they've done a really good job of analyzing that data either.
Yes. So it comes down to the fact also that it's a challenge because, you know, with some of our clients, for example, are using S400 as a server, where that's where they store data on premise. This is this technology is 25 years old or maybe more.
Oh, there are core systems in the credit union world that are older than you. I mean, there are some that are 50.
I know. And so of course it's a challenge to try to find ways to basically get access to that data in a structured format so that it can be used and we can apply machine learning on it. So it's not straightforward. We help our clients with that, actually. With our technology, we can, again, as I explained, source data from different parts. So whether you're on premise, whether you have an old legacy system, some of our clients are actually transferring file, with our platform. And obviously, we leverage today our cloud solution, so our clients can also have their data on cloud. And that's one of the biggest challenge today that the industry is facing in terms of being able to apply AI or machine learning to create insights on their customers. The fact that this data exists, they're sitting on a gold mine, but you just need to dig it out. You just need to put it in a proper format and have the proper technology to analyze it.
I think probably something that's making this more critical for financial institutions is that fintech lenders do not have access to the individual's bank account information, but they have access to all that third-party information. And they're pretty good at processing that information. They know that the answers to their questions are in that information. So they're moving pretty fast to develop smarter lending products, for instance.
Yeah, no, that's true. So indeed, you can leverage other sources of data and find different ways to analyze that data and to utilize it. So in the specific case of credit lending, yes, the old-fashioned way of doing credit scoring based on your historical transactional data on your checking account is, yes, one way to do it, but there are other ways. There are other ways to assess credit scoring. There are other ways to analyze and forecast how the likelihood of a client paying off their loan regularly and in time and in the long term. So you know, the innovation level here is quite high and quite exciting. So what we provide for our clients, and let's call them, you know, the incumbents as opposed to fintech. And, you know, we're helping incumbents basically creating very quickly those solutions. We have access, they have access to a range of off-the-shelf plug-and-play modules and solutions that they can easily deploy and offer to their clients. And we're able to accelerate their digital transformation program and put them at par with the new solutions that are out there today in the market. We can demonstrate, for example, on some of the product that we increase the distribution from lead generation to conversion from 3% to 30%. So it's a massive accelerator for the bank.
You said from 3% to 30%?
Yes, that's right.
That is massive.
Yes.
Now, how are your charges? You know, what's the basis for the...
We are a technology provider, so it's a SaaS model. Our clients license the technology.
What are the typical fees?
Well, it depends on... we've got a range of, you know, services and APIs that our clients can consume. And so depending on the usage, depending on what solution they're using, it could be very different. It could start at 15, 25K a year all the way to 500K a year. It really depends on... What you're leveraging the technology for?
No, so some vendors I talk to basically have only very expensive solutions, which don't always work for the people.
We have plug and play solutions. We are here to democratize the use of artificial intelligence for clients that usually could not afford those type of technology, and we've deployed and have solutions that can, you know, be very affordable for our clients.
Now, you said you had two tools for this market. What's the other one?
Right, yes. So the other one is conversational AI. So that's a chatbot technology which uses natural language processing. So what it does, it's basically helping an individual or retail customer to get access to a frictionless and human-like conversation on the chatbot system. And basically, it's enabling our clients to do two things. One is helping them with lead generation, with conversion, so basically augmenting their marketing campaigns, but through a channel that is a lot more intuitive for customers, and helping our client's ability to convert those leads into qualified leads for advisors or for the relationship managers. And the second one is to apply the conversational AI for financial advice, for helping clients receiving guidance and advice on the existing product of the bank, right? So for example, I have an investment account with a bank or with a brokerage firm. Can you help me out choosing the funds I want to invest in? Or can you help me out with achieving my retirement goals faster? Or can you help me out understand what is the life insurance product available on with that provider?
And what's the advantage for the institution in offering this rather than having a human being?
Sure. So right. Yeah. So the advantage is really around the scalability of the guidance and advice capabilities, as well as converting those traffic into qualified leads. I'll give you a very simple example. If you take a relationship manager or an advisor, they may have 500 clients on their book, but they're only going to talk to 10% of that during the year. Because they have limited resources, limited capabilities, but also because they are going to focus on the clients that are the most productive and the most engaged, right? Which means that the bank loses out potentially on 90% of the remaining clients. Well, those clients are actually on the book of that bank, but the advisor does not engage them, does not try to understand what could be of interest to those clients, and don't have time to reach out to those individuals, right? And to advise them. So they either go to the competitors, or they don't generate as much revenue as the bank could expect from those clients. And you know, we change that dynamic by enabling the chatbot to basically augment the reach of those advisors for those clients, and really giving them first a UI, an interaction that is worthy of the 21st century. So you've got an exciting digital solution there, and you can get access to any questions you have on your accounts, on your savings, on your investments, on your products there. And then if you want to, then that's at that point that you can ask the intelligent assistant to talk to your relationship manager or to your advisor.
I assume in most cases, the machine would be able to answer most of my questions though.
Yeah, so we've built our own natural language processing technology, which basically enable the chatbot to understand what you're saying when you're talking or when you are typing into the chat, right? However, this is very specific to our vertical, right? It deals with financial services. So if you ask the chatbot to order a taxi or to order a pizza online, then that's not going to work. So the domain expertise is very high, very focused, obviously. We have published an academic research paper in Europe, in the UK, with the Alan Turing Institute, which is one of the leading AI research center in the world, on the different machine learning models we're using for our natural language processing. And indeed, yes, it has very high accuracy, also stemming from the fact that we collect a huge amount of data and we train constantly our chatbot and our technology with those conversations that we're having across the range of clients that today we have on the solution.
And the good news here, as I'm sure you know better than I, is so many millions of people have gotten used to talking to machines, particularly Alexa or Siri. And
right.
So we've been trained to, it's normal to ask a machine what weather is, and the machine knows.
Yes. In fact, if you look at finance, you've got a research from Gartner, which explained that in the next 2 to 3 years, 85% of all queries in banking will be done through chatbots. And that is across the board. That is really on all demographics, whether you are 18 years old, all the way to, you know, you're 70 or 75 years old. In fact, with one of our clients here, the solution is specifically deployed for much older customer for decumulation and post-retirement solutions. And we've got a very high engagement rate. A lot of people would prefer to talk to an intelligent assistant, and because they will not feel judged by the type of question they're asking. Sometimes, you know, you go to talk to your advisor and you feel that you're being judged because the question you're asking are stupid, or because you know you are worried about the state of your finances and you don't want to discuss anything, at least there is complete transparency. You can ask as many questions as you want. You can ask the same question as many times as you like, and no one will judge you.
I've heard exactly that, particularly talking to young people say under 25 or under 30, whose finances aren't necessarily that robust, and they feel that the teller or whoever they're talking to is, loser, you got $12 in your checking account.
Exactly. Right.
And the person never says this, but these kids assume.
Fair enough. Well, yeah. Again, that's come back to the previous point, which is, historically, of course, incumbent will be focusing on clients that are, for them, the most profitable and can generate the highest revenue possible. But we live in a different world today, and the demographics are shifting. So you need to be able to address all your clients at scale. And that's a solution that is very powerful for that.
And I think one of the paradoxes of the cell phone is that it's increasing people's desires to communicate orally, verbally, rather than in writing and text. Because it's hard to write something coherent and grammatical on a cell phone, at least it is for me. It's whereas I can speak perfectly normally into a cell phone.
Right, yeah.
Now, do you also make some PFM tools?
So we do offer some services that are related to PFM. So for example, open banking is a good example. So the ability to aggregate data from other sources and other vendors or other banks, and the ability to automatically categorize those transactions. So for example, if you link your bank account, you're going to see how much money you're spending in groceries, in utilities, in entertainment, or leisure, whatever that is. And you can help those individuals with planning for their personal finances on a regular basis, right? Helping them understand where they are spending their money, if they can save some extra money on their utilities bills, for example, and if they can find better ways to plan on a regular basis so they can stash away some money on savings account regularly. In fact, we have one feature which seems to be quite powerful, is the ability to compare with people like you. So people like you means, behavioral science can be quite powerful. And on average, people don't want to be doing less than their peers, or at least they want to stay or to be in the same social level than their peers. And so basically, if you tell them, on average, people like you, that's how much they save per month, or people like you, that's how much they spend on utilities bills, et cetera, et cetera. That drives a positive behavior, and that really helps people improving their daily finances.
Yeah, I've looked at PFM tools for probably 20 years. The original, and the complaint of bankers has always been, they're great, but no one uses them. And the reason is the first generation, you had to populate it with data. So it was a lot of, it was labor intensive.
Right.
Second generation, someone said, well, we could scoop up the data from the account, self-populate, boom. Okay, that was an improvement. But then what? What do I do with it? What does this data mean? And I think with machine learning, with AI, it's possible to kick this into a whole new plateau where the thing actually can make some intelligent suggestions to the consumer.
I think the what you're describing is absolutely right. PFM is not a revolutionary thing. It has been around for quite a long time. And indeed, at the beginning, I think even Microsoft had eMoney and all money tools. On your Excel, you can populate manually your daily expenses. But of course, then you have to keep it updated. So you're not going to do that on a daily basis. So we figured a way to grab data and to automatically populate that data. That's today, it's called open banking. This data aggregation technology is not completely widespread and used by a lot of people. And it's presented in most of the fintech software And so that has helped a lot. And indeed, today you're able to better recognize the transaction. And again, natural language processing will basically be very powerful for that. So you can categorize the spending and you can then start again with your next best action. All right. So next month, we based on your previous expenses, we expect that you're going to spend X on petrol or X on utilities, etc. And you can start receiving, product that can help you, or some recommendation that can help you better manage your finances. And so that's indeed very exciting.
So do you think you're going to start seeing more pickup of PFM, more usage of it?
I think the key here is to be able to highlight a strong value proposition to your customer. If they realize that there is added value in the tools, then they are using it. If you just provide something that is static and passive, then why would you use it?
Well, the original PFM was sort of like flossing your teeth. That was a wonderful idea, but more people agree it's wonderful than actually do it. So.
That's right. Yeah. And your image is very accurate.
Good. I think I've covered about what I want. Is there anything that you wish I'd asked you about?
Look, I think, no, we covered a lot of items. I just want to insist on one point we made earlier, which is those tools, AI and the other next best action or conversational AI, they're available to all sizes of clients, not just the big institutions and the large international banks. We are helping very small wealth managers and credit unions all the way to large organizations. And it's important to understand that, you can really provide outstanding digital customer experiences and in a very personalized way, even though you have limited budget and resources.
Before we go, think hard about how you can help support this podcast so we can do more interviews with more thoughtful leaders in the credit union world. What we're trying to figure out here in these podcasts is what's next for credit unions. What can they do to really, really, really make a difference in the financial scene? Can't all be mega banks, can it? It's my hope it won't all be mega banks. It'll always be a place for credit unions. That's what we're discussing here. So figure out how you can help. Get in touch with me. This is rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. Robert McGarvey again, and that's rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. Get in touch. We'll figure out a way that you can help. We need your support. We want your support. We thank you for your support. The CU 2.0 Podcast.